I like On Your Feet or On Your Knees because it has the most mistakes.
Makes it real.
It is real rock and roll, man.
Real rock and roll, no fix-ups.
Well, we have lots of cowbell on the new album. I don't know. That might be fair. I don't know.
I haven't put any on it yet, have I?
Hey, this is Party Like a Rockstar podcast, and I'm your host, Joel. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese on the market today. They're lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher, perev, and 100% vegan. If you like what you see, check out the next video. If you like this video, please subscribe and like by clicking the little round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or our other guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle is Joel Rody. If you haven't already read my book, Memoir of a Rody, it's now available through Amazon and paperback, Kindle, or as an audiobook. I hope you enjoy the show. Joe Bouchard is best known as a former member of Blue Oyster Cult. He recently released the album American Rocker. His brother is Albert Bouchard. He's a founding member and the drummer, or a drummer, of Blue Oyster Cult. His newest album is Imaginos 2. It was released last year. You can find both albums on Spotify. It is streaming other places online. I assure you guys it's worth listening to both of them. I had the opportunity to do so in the last couple of days. Thank you guys. So my first question to you guys is Before the Kiss. A lot of cowbell in Before the Kiss, Albert. are we reminiscing here? Is this, are we having fun? Are you the cowbell guy?
I played it on the Reaper, but I didn't. Usually we would have Eric Bloom would play the percussion most of the time, either Eric or David Lucas.
Uh-huh.
Both misremember that they played on Reaper, but it's understandable. We're old.
Wasn't it just your birthday? Is that what you told me, Joe? It was just Albert's birthday? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe remembers. He remembers everything. So if I have a question, I go to Joe.
The good and the bad, or just the good? You don't have to answer.
Try not to go to the bad place too much.
No, we're in the happy mood right now. It's pretty good.
Oh yeah.
Lots of good stuff happened. We started our own record label. We started a record label in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah. How many acts do you have?
Two. Him and me.
You're doing good. One a year.
But we may get more. But we're putting out a lot of stuff.
Great.
He's got two double albums. I just put out my seventh solo album. So it's all good.
And then one of the albums then, it was Pink Floyd, Animals.
Oh, yeah. You know, I did a special guest. This was fantastic.
Super neat.
I think Albert talked to some guy at Cleopatra about doing... Right. Some kind of Pink Floyd thing, but, you know, and I never expected anything come of it. So I got an email. I'm stuck at home like everybody, you know, and I get an email. You want to play on a Pink Floyd record? Well, a Pink Floyd tribute record.
Did you ask who they were?
Who's Pink Floyd?
You have to look it up?
No, I know this is going to be a piece of cake, you know. I can sound like... Roger Waters any day of the week. but the thing is,
the compliment is that Roger Waters still sounds like Roger Waters any day of the week.
But anyway, the guests on this album were amazing.
Yeah.
On drums, Billy Cobham, who's an amazing, you know, drummer. We toured with Billy Cobham in 1972 with the Mahavishnu Orchestra. Incredible guy, great guy all these years. And so he was the drummer. Mraz from Yes was a keyboard player. Singer from Dream Theater, James LaBrie. And on guitar, Al Di Meola.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
How good is that?
Yeah, that's super neat.
And people have been telling me they like that track. It's my biggest Spotify track.
It's super great to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
glad you heard that.
They knew about you because of actually the Spirits Burning thing, which is on the same label. So Don Falcone actually got that, you know,
that's that's a prog rock thing that we've been working on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It spawns
a fan question for me. And so have you, either of you guys ever played with or for somebody that was intimidating to be next to, and that you were a big fan and you were nervous to be around them? Was there any nervousness ever?
Yep.
Yeah.
Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck. I got tongue tied.
What did you say to him when you finally talked to him?
I said, good show.
Great thing to tell him.
That's about as good as one time I played for Ringo. He was in the audience, and I went out after I played and said, oh, pleasure to meet you. And he said, thank you.
Hat checks over there. That's good. You got any Joe or?
Well, you know, Pete Townsend.
Yeah.
You've got to say Pete Townsend is pretty awesome. So yeah. I was in a bar in New York, and we were going to go to his show, and I'm sitting there talking to some of my friends from upstate New York, and next thing you know, Pete Townsend is standing next to me, and I'm being introduced, and oh, Pete, and I'm shaking his hand. I'm a big fan, blah, 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 you know, for ages, you know, you've influenced me. And then he says, so what are you doing now? Like, and I, wait a minute, Pete Townsend asked me a question. I'm supposed to ask him the questions. I didn't know what to say. Oh, he said, oh, I'm in college. You know, I'm back in college. I was getting my master's degree. And oh, that's very nice. You know,
I'm listening to The Who. What have you been doing?
Yeah.
What do you got to say that's so interesting?
How can you not listen to The Who? It's everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the hardest one. I've met Mick Jagger, and I've met Roger Waters, and they were very nice. But
yeah,
the biggest stunner for me was when Pete Townsend asked me a question.
Have you ever met Christopher Walken or Will Ferrell?
No.
Neither one of you guys?
He used to live in my neighborhood over in Weston, Connecticut.
And which one, Walken?
Yeah, he used to drive. He'd jog by the house, but I didn't know him then. And I, you know, kind of shy. You know, I would stop him on the road while he's jogging, and he would be doing these roles, and you could tell he was running the lines through his head, and he would change his appearance, running by the house. It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, Will Ferrell. We were talking about art beforehand. We were talking about art, and Will Ferrell's wife is actually an auctioneer. Damn good one too.
So
it was funny. But after that whole thing on Saturday Night Live, you knew I was going here. Sorry,
sure. Like,
here it's coming. Bring it on. But I could keep it quick because I did listen to something else where you talked about it. But it was a surprise to you. You didn't know they were going to do it, and then was this whole resurgence like exciting, because I would imagine that it brought on a new audience, possibly with a younger community. And
yeah, maybe not so much the first one, but you know, it's been repeated, and it's just definitely reached a whole generation we wouldn't have known.
It's not only younger. I mean, I was teaching in a inner city public school, high school.
Wow.
And which is mostly Black and Latino. And all of a sudden, all these kids knew about Blue Oyster Cult. It was completely off their radar until that happened.
So you're like famous guy walking down the halls now?
It was, yeah, I became instantly a celebrity in the school. And the kids in my music class demanded that we do the skit. We did it. We would do it like every...
Were you playing the cowbell?
No. All the kids would play the cowbell.
Did they all play A's, or did you fail any of these kids?
I think they all got A's.
Was it a gifted school? It was just a public school, or was it a gifted program or anything?
Public school, inner city kids.
Wow, good on you, man. How neat is that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
He got to go to the White House.
Yeah.
With the teacher of the year. He didn't get the teacher of the year, but he was invited by Obama to go to the White House.
As a even teacher. Got a cool president. We won't get into politics, but he's cool. He was just narrating. I was watching this really great like National Geographic thing, and I'm like, I know this guy's voice. It was Obama.
Hey, you got to get a gig, you know? Yes. It's like us. We got to get a gig no matter what.
Got poor guys looking for a job.
Michelle saying, Barry, you got to get a job.
Get out of the house. Make something of your life. Patti Smith, way back in the day. So I looked into it a little bit. You guys both got to work with her. You sang with her too, Albert, right? I think. Mm-hmm. And she you guys met her, I'm assuming, because she was dating Alan Lanier. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sandy Pearlman discovered her. He was the first person to really promote her.
And she was working in a coffee. So I was just reading today. So she was working in a coffee shop. He was
a bookstore. It was the bookstore.
You're right. Bookstore. Yeah.
And they would do poetry readings at the bookstore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he went to her readings and he told her that she should front a band.
Yeah.
Wow.
She should front a band.
I got a great idea. You guys can be like Jefferson Starship with a girl lead singer and a guy lead singer. And I know the girl, Patti Smith. I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
No, I didn't go over with the rest of the guys.
Well, some of the stuff I was reading, it was saying because there was a strong form of anti-Semitism with her, and so that was part of what got her in the mix. But it was from Richard Meltzer, I guess, said Meltzer? It in his thing. Have you heard of any of this stuff?
I don't know. I think that the idea that Patti Smith is anti-Semitic is absurd, but she is really into Muslim culture and things like that. So, you know, which is, let's face it, it was a fantastic culture. I mean, we owe, a lot of our science math stuff to the Muslims, to the Arabs, so.
Mm-hmm.
Their artwork, their designs, all of these things are mind-boggling. So
yeah,
you know. And besides, they discovered hash.
That's great. Have you ever heard of Howard Marks? He was an English guy. He was a big hashish dealer. There's a book called Mr. Nice. He passed away a few years ago, but he was like one of the biggest convicted hashish dealers in history. And he was like the only guy ever to be extradited from Spain to the US. Well, he has a English degree from Oxford, a master's degree. So he wrote this great bio. It's amazing. And it was on England's bestseller list forever, but it's totally worth checking out. It's very random here, but it's really good. So, all right, here's another one. So back in Blue Oyster Cult days. So Albert, you leave. What was it like playing in the band for all those years without your brother there? I'm assuming when you guys were kids, you guys were playing together all the time. Is that how
We started. I was 10 and he was 11 all through junior high and high school. We had a great band.
So mom and dad are musicians
band.
Or?
No. They were musical, but not, you know.
What was the name of your guys' band in high school?
The Regal Tones.
Ooh, it's a good one. That's good.
It's a real 60s name.
Yeah, it is. That's
the
great.
Regal Tones. We had a reunion 40 years later in 2006.
That's fun. And
yeah, it was amazing. It was
our best gig ever.
It was.
2,000 kids in the 2,000, what used to be kids. Middle-aged people in the audience, and we nailed the harmonies for the first time ever.
We did the first set was like surf, the second set was a British invasion. So the first set was Beach Boys and Safaris, and then the second set was Beatles and Stones.
Oh, the good stuff!
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, we had a wardrobe change too.
Yeah,
we all dressed the same.
I'll tell you, so here's my favorite one I ask everybody. So do you guys have gigs you remember back in the day that are funny, or they stand out because they're what the heck, or you know, how the hell are we going to play here? Some of the ones is Blessed Union of Soul. They did a gig with one of the big Motown acts at a Girl Scout Jamboree.
It was
like,
whoa.
Like, that's okay. A good one.
Well, we played just about everywhere, and some were you know, you're out in the middle of a swamp on a truck, and
yeah, we played a show in Coeur d'Alene that it in a riot, or they trashed the place. That was crazy.
Yeah. How about that one in Colorado where we flew in the helicopter?
Oh,
out,
yeah,
in the middle of nowhere,
a desert,
in the middle of the desert. And it was crazy.
I saw a tarantula.
yeah.
How many people were at the gig? It was a big venue.
It was like a patch of, you know, level. You know, it was in the middle of the desert. It was really, I don't remember. It wasn't like there was a stadium or anything. It was just, you know, they threw speakers and
bunch of hippies out in the field. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But it was the desert. It was really in the desert.
Yeah.
Because you guys were flip-flopping on singing songs all the time. And I think it's one of the strengths of the group was that you guys did take the roles on for the vocal. Was there arguments over who would sing what songs?
Yes.
There was?
Yeah. Well, mostly we would defer to the producer.
Pick. It was usually the producer, one of the three guys, you know, either Lucas or Krugman or Perlman. Would pick who would sing it, and we'd all try out. You know, we'd try out for these songs.
You had auditions.
Yeah.
So there's the auditions. Have you guys heard the masters with the other vocals? Are they out there?
No, we actually recorded them. We just tried them out.
We'd sing them live in the rehearsal. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. By the time we got into the studio, we knew who was going to sing what. The only exception that I can remember was Astronomy.
Yeah.
Originally, it was Joe and I sang it together, and then they wanted me to sing it. And right before I sang it, I sang "Dominance and Submission," and I totally blew out my voice.
Oh.
So I couldn't sing it. I just couldn't do it. So Eric Bloom jumped into the mix, and he sang it, and that's how we got
fantastic.
To sing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great job.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The album Imaginos. So is it what you were conceptualizing for all those years? Are you proud of, I'm talking about the first one, of what it resulted in at the end, Albert?
I was proud of it up to a point until they just kept going and going and going for no reason at all. And the quality of the music suffered, and the worst thing about first Imaginos is that it took us 7 years to finish it, and during that 7 years, the three or four people that signed me to that contract left Columbia, so my people were not there anymore, and I got, you know, they didn't do any promotion at all.
Yeah,
you know. It was terrible. They basically released it just so they could recoup it against the Blue Oyster Cult royalties.
And it was a fine. Years.
And they definitely didn't promote it whatsoever. They didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
Rob.
What's your favorite Blue Oyster Cult album? Is that a fair question? I don't know. It might be a dumb question. There's some great albums, but.
On Your Feet or On Your Knees.
Oh, you do have a favorite.
Yeah. Yep. I like the first album, the first Blue Oyster Cult album. That's probably my favorite. It's just mystical, and it just laid everything out. I was so happy when we were recording that first album. It was, you know, fantastic, you know.
I like On Your Feet or On Your Knees because it has the most mistakes.
Makes it real.
It is real rock and roll, man.
Real rock and roll. No fix-ups.
Yeah, no fixing up. No auto-tune.
No
none
cheating.
Of that.
No cheating. It's just real rock.
Rock.
So I was putting together this podcast at my buddy's house. My buddies all have little children at this point. Most of them do. Little girl had a question. She came out and she said it with like such spirit that I've asked everybody and I've got the most wonderful of answers. It's been very surprising on a lot of them. And the question was, when did you first feel famous? And so if fame is not an answer that you think is fitting for you, just because maybe you don't like the word fame or whatever, was there a moment in your careers that each of you would choose that was a kernel that changed things, that made you proud of something, something that happened? What would you say, each of you guys?
Jeez.
Yeah, these tough little kids, man.
I'm still waiting for that moment.
Oh, I think I had a few of those moments.
Once in a while, you know, yeah. I'd be walking on the street in Manhattan. Some stranger would come up and say, Albert Bouchard, I know you. I saw you at the Academy of Music with Kiss was opening. But yeah, wow. No, I don't know. I don't even really feel that famous. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that it's a useful feeling for me to have.
Mm. Well, yeah, you might get complacent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I have to live up to something.
Mm.
And I don't want to do that. I'm just trying as hard as I can to be as good as I can and to create interesting.
You got a moment, Joe?
Well, I think playing Madison Square Garden was a real thrill. And that was early on, before Reaper, before we had a hit. We were there with Rod Stewart and the Faces.
Yeah.
Big time. It was big time.
Met Warhol that night.
Who's Andy Warhol? Yeah, he was there.
Oh, wow.
David Bowie was there.
David Bowie was there.
It was the first time I ever.
Are you cutting out who?
Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, I thought you said Keith Haring.
Bruce.
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce was there. Yeah.
Wow, that's good. What was Andy Warhol like? Did either one of you guys get a chance to talk to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to do a photo session with him.
Oh, wow.
We went to the factory a year later. Maybe it was 2 years later. It was 76. It was 1976. We went to the factory to take some photos for his magazine interview. And it was nice, except Albert wasn't there. So only four of us showed up.
Yeah.
He was doing a Vogue spread.
I don't remember.
I don't know. He was doing his other job or something.
were you guys protective over one another when you were in the group because you're brothers?
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you guys think Don't Fear the Reaper was going to be a huge hit?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. Albert I would give Albert a tape to listen to when I was working on songs, and I wouldn't think much of it, but he would always bring it up to the band. Ooh, we got to do this. So I'm sure because of his insistence, we did more of my songs than probably they would have without him, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, I tend to get excited about things.
Still to this day.
To this day, I do. Oh, I'm so excited about that lead I got yesterday. I can't wait for you. Just send me what you got, man.
I know. Well, I did a few little. We're in the middle of working on Imaginos 3 and
Mutant Reformation.
Is that what? That's what it's going to be. Mutant Reformation.
It's Imaginos 2, Bombs Over Germany. And then the next one's going to be Imaginos 3, Mutant Reformation.
Perfect. Perfect.
So, yeah, I got a lead on a song yesterday, and I'm waiting on Joe to send me his vocal. So, and then that song will
Instead
be done.
He's doing this podcast. Priorities, Joe. Priorities.
I got a bunch of stuff from Richie Castellano. He did a vocal on a song that we wrote together, and that is crazy good.
And Mike Watt. I like Mike Watt. One of you guys played with Mike Watt.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Well, he says he's going to do something. I'm still waiting. He said, he told me back in January he was going to do it, but then he went on this hell ride, you know, and I saw him in the city. He says, oh man, once I get back to California, you know, I'm going to do it in May. This was last month. So, yeah, he didn't. And then he said, oh, I'm having problems with it. So I need to call him and get him on the stick. But yeah.
We're talking about Mike Watt, right?
Yes, yeah. Mike.
Yeah, he's going to be part. He'll be part of the Imaginos 3 album.
That's awesome. That's really. So, you know, one thing would be, so you guys have done a lot of, you guys have a large body of work. You guys have done a hell of a lot of music through the years. What keeps you going working on these albums? Because it's a lot of damn work, you know? And I get it. It's fun. Like what I do.
It's but fun.
You have fun still?
Oh, yeah. 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 I got all these fancy guitars back there. Got to make them work. Someone's got to use them? I got to justify my habit.
Yeah. Well, guys, I do appreciate your time. If you have anything else that you think would be a fun story or something to add, please share it. But
I got some background vocals here in this, then I'm going to be done. So I want to try and get back to the city so I can get a good parking spot.
Is this your studio or you're in the studio somewhere?
No, I'm in Carriage House Studios in Stamford, Connecticut. This is where we made the last two
Blue Coupe albums. Yeah, the Blue Coupe albums.
And it's great. It's got the Neve console here and
awesome.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So are you producing some of it too, or you play and you go, or no, you do?
Today I am doing a rock musical that my friend Dana McCoy has written. So we finished all the tracking, but we're trying to do some background vocals on her stuff because she wants to come out of here with a record. So we're going to try and do it all in one day. We did 20 songs today.
Holy crap. That's insane.
But we got a crack crew here with Mike Fornatel and Alec Morton. So Alec Morton from Raging Slab. Mike Fornatel from, I don't know, everybody plays with him. He's like a New York legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we have lots of cowbell on the new album. I don't know. That might be fair. I don't know.
I haven't put any on it yet, have I? I got...
now you got him started.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, it's going to be your fault.
You know, it would be a fun album if we put it my fun. It would be a fun album is if we put you and Will Ferrell together because he's a really good singer. I love his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be all about it.
Well,
oh, yeah.
We're available.
Make magic happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, make it happen.
Yeah, I'll tell my manager to call his manager. Might be, you know.
Oh, you cut out. Might be what?
I said, I'll have my people call his people.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thank you very much for your time. It is appreciated. You can miss the traffic and get out of there.
Yeah.
We're good.
Okay.
Well, great. Thanks.
You are welcome. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe by clicking the round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or the guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle's Joel Rody. And don't forget, when you party like a rock star, don't be a dick.